Olé, 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 olé. Olé. Pa, pa, ra, pa, 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 pa. Yes, friends. Welcome to This Week in Mormons, but in a more important place. Welcome to a world where Spain are the World Cup champions.
That's my vuvuzela I'm doing for you.
Champions.
Champions.
Yes, my dear friends, the team led by that is 33% Catalan has vanquished those filthy, filthy Dutchmen and their pot-smoking ways. Spain is now victorious, so
this
has nothing to do with the show, but long live the world and European champions. Spain is basically the champion of everything now.
Well, it was about time, seeing as how they'd never been in the cup.
They have 100% success rate then for the final, so there you go.
Every time they've gotten there.
And I believe the Netherlands there. Currently has a 0% success rate, so... I know you were rooting for them, Al. I know you love your silly Dutch people.
Truly, it's his.
I don't really know why you want to have all that, eat their salted cod. And
well, Jeff, for a few simple reasons. One, they wear orange proudly.
I do appreciate their outfits. Still.
And I actually have a pair of Netherlandy socks on order.
Of course you do.
And I like them for the witticisms that the commentators can make. Things such as... It appears that the victory is in the Netherlands for the Netherlands.
You know, I saw...
End quote.
Sorry, please continue.
No, that was my end quote.
I saw a terrific review, who was the site, but reviewing ESPN's coverage of the World Cup and just lauding it for how great it's been, which is really nice because they did get on ESPN for the ridiculous LeBron James press conference, you know, nonsense on, what was that, Thursday?
Wait, what happened with that?
Don't you
I wasn't
remember?
Even around. I was working.
It was terrible. It was the fact
was
that
it?
LeBron James, whoop-de-doo, free agent. Question is, where will he go?
No, I know he went to Miami.
He went to Miami, but they held an hour-long special to hype up where he would go. They spent an hour just talking about where they thought he would go, and then had a little event with LeBron there, sitting in like tall director's chairs. It was like inside the actor's studio.
With James Lipton?
Well, not quite. It would be a lot better with James Lipton, with just some ESPN tool. And they're sitting up on a platform looking at one another. Okay? Basically perpendicular to the camera itself. And then behind them are kids from the Boys and Girls Club of America. And they sit there and talk, and he asks LeBron very absurd, typical, you know, just suck up ridiculous questions. This was worse than like Oscar red carpet kind of stuff. It was really bad. And then he asked him, he's like, so have you come to a decision? It's like it's Survivor or something. And then LeBron says, all right, I'm going to take my skills to South Beach and play for the Heat. And then everyone's like, oh, da, 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 da. They wasted an hour of everyone's life for this. And obviously I watched it, but I had an excuse because I was hanging out with friends and we were making fun of it.
Okay. Well, yeah. as long as you were poking fun.
So, in a world where the World Cup was a triumph, we still have to deal with LeBron. But enough of that. I will be dropping. I'm elated about Spain. I'm bouncing off the walls with joy.
Well, good work.
How have you been, though, sir?
Well, it wasn't quite as jubilant for me. I was going for the Netherlands.
Yes, but beyond your football weakness. Yes, continue.
Nothing's been good this week. Been working hard. Lots of, like, this is a pretty intense month, work-wise and activity-wise. This is my second time back in Kansas City in about a week. So lots of travel, lots of planes. I ended up having to take the bus to the airport this last time. So for like a 7 a.m. flight, I was on a bus at like 4 a.m. It's ridiculous. It's no way to live, boys. No way to live.
I guess so, but you're also you're a successful man.
I hope to be someday, perhaps.
Right.
No, but things are good. Things are good. I got some. I picked up some old couches from a buddy, so now I have a place to nap in my office. It was like the biggest upgrade I could ever imagine for my barren office.
I wish I had an office.
I now have a desk, a chair, huge monitors and computer equipment, and then an 8-foot whiteboard and a couch.
Question.
It's a perfect office for me.
Question.
Yes.
How do I get humongous monitors for free?
You need to go work for companies that want to buy you humongous monitors. Yes, because... And then, due to budget cuts, they let you go years later.
And you keep their stuff.
Absolutely.
You see, you are likely aware that on my end, at my job, where we do spreadsheets and junk like that all day long, where a widescreen, higher definition monitor was pretty useful for being able to put documents side by side.
Yep.
Yeah, if you want a wider screen, anything monitor, you have to buy it on your own. So.
Well, I think that's fair because in my line of work, I spend a lot of time on email, and so I need many screens to handle all my email.
Yeah, yeah.
And right. And so, definitely. I mean, it's justifiable to spend money on
that. I was tempted to get a splitter and use my old monitor just for my Outlook because I really thought it was necessary.
It's just really nice because you're always back and forth in it. It's handy.
Sure, right. So anyway.
Anyway, wait. So
grand, where you're good.
So you're back from Utah, though.
I am back from Utah, yes.
I got a little sampling of the investigative journalism. Well done, Jeff.
Oh, good work. Thank you. Yes, I had quite the time, and obviously we'll spare the details for next week. We're shooting to do a segment.
I'm just so stoked that we have like legit reporting.
Well, before you call it legit reporting, you should probably, you know.
Okay, maybe I'll listen. But still, the fact that you went outside and talked to people for this show.
Yes, I mean, here's just a teaser of my legit reporting.
Yes, hello everyone. Here we are. Mormons on the street with me. Yay!
Mormons on the street.
That was actually, I was more just testing out my recording apparatus.
Did you ever listen to that one NPR episode where they talk, or where they like...
The guy on the bus? Oh, not, you mean no. This American Life or what?
Yeah, This American Life, but they did the one where they went to a Chick-fil-A grand opening.
No, I never heard that one.
Oh, it was brilliant. Well, it was kind of the same thing where they just sent a dude with a tape recorder. And so he's just like trying to get snippets from people that had no interest in talking to him. They were just there for a free sandwich in the morning.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I have this great vision that that's what it'll be like. So I'm anxious to get my hands on those files.
It was an interesting experience, to say the least. And it was fun. So we will we'll get into that next week. Other than that, Utah itself, it was actually quite lovely.
Treated you well?
It did treat me well, and it's really nice. They had a wet season, so it's very, very green right now. And there's still snow on the mountains, and everything looks quite beautiful. I had fry sauce.
I'm there in my mind right now.
It was very good times all around. Lovely wedding. I went to Lagoon, which was wildly entertaining.
How does it hold up to a Disneyland buff?
That's like comparing... As Maybe says on Arrested Development, that's like comparing apples to some fruit no one's ever heard of, basically. So it was fine. I mean, it's more a classic amusement park, not theming much of anything. I think last time I went there was maybe 20 years ago. Yeah, I was probably 9 or 10. And it was very interesting. Yep.
That's how pretty I feel much about like Knott's Berry Farm. I see no value in Knott's Berry
Farm.
It's
more along the lines of that, like your typical amusement park. A lot of rides that are basically carnival rides with permanent foundations.
So that you feel a little bit safer stepping on the caterpillar.
Something like that, though some of them are straight up, like, you can tell they are collapsible and anything. Anyways, it was a grand time. I was there for all of 3.5 hours on the 5th of July when you'd assume it would be so crowded you wouldn't be able to do anything. But no, I pretty much hit everything I wanted to do.
Was there a bunch? Well, sweet.
It was good stuff. So all in all, you did great, everyone. And, I came to you last week barely at the start of my trip. It got better. Also, while I was there, I went and checked out the Draper Temple. One of our newer ones. You might remember we reported that the Draper Temple president died a couple months ago.
I do remember.
Anyway, drove out there to Draper, and it's way in the edge top of Draper. And it was very nice, beautiful building, very beautiful building. And the Celestial Room ceiling is so high. That's the biggest thing I wanted to report on for that. It is like so far up there. You stare up. I think one of my friends said, yes, it's to remind you of how far away God is from you.
Ouch! You know, ouch!
While you're in the celestial room, of course, it was a beautiful building, though. Really impressive. It was good, and I was going to think about doing a session in the Ochre Temple after that, except I spilled Dr. Pepper all over my car. So, that's my
tough
story.
Tough break. I was always impressed with the Draper Temple. I never actually went up to it.
What do you mean you were always impressed? They only dedicated it a year ago.
I know. Well, but I've been in Utah several times, and as you drive the I-15 right there, it's like a good little beacon right up on the hill.
No,
they placed it well.
The
lighting. Oh, the lighting.
It's funny because it is right smack in the middle of a neighborhood, more so than I've ever seen for any temple that's even sort of in a residential neighborhood. I mean, it is just right there.
Mesa.
No. Mesa's got other businesses and stuff around it. Typical big temple lot. This is like the lot, and then it's like the street widths around it are typical residential streets. So you walk 25 feet, and then a house is right next to it. I mean, it's crazy.
Dude, I bet those people are loving life, man.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they are. I don't know. I think I was there at night. I'm not sure if I saw the temple lit up or not.
What does that do to home prices? It's got to be, you know, we talked about ward buildings.
Generally, temples raise home values. They raise property values.
Well, I know. We talked about how ward buildings typically raise the values of the residential homes.
Yeah.
In the area,
Phoenix dwellers. Come on.
Suckers.
Get on the ball. Anywho.
All right.
So, been a good time. Nice to be back in California where it is not 85 degrees at night. And
dude, in Missouri right now, like, I have to work to breathe. My lungs aren't used. It's like I'm a fish that's been out of water too long.
You're having
and
a
coming
very hard
back
time.
To it, I'm like, whoa, I forgot how much of a man I feel like just breathing.
You are all man. Pure
it's
man.
It's true. I've grown a beard.
Have you really, though? You grow beards every now and then you cease to grow beard.
So. I do. I have not kept a beard, but I've got probably 2 weeks of growth on it. But tonight I went to a priesthood meeting. It was a kind of a trick priesthood meeting. It was actually an anti-pornography meeting. And
they do that to you.
I know. They sucked everybody in, and then they're like, surprise, it's all about porn.
We thought they were doing that to us today because they made us stay in the chapel for priesthood. But it turns out they were just reorganizing our presidency.
Oh, that's nice.
Really pulled the wool over our eyes, though. We were like, what's going on? We can have some big talk.
When everybody starts, like, sneaking out the back.
Well, because it was weird because they were so bent on it. And they made a point to, like, dismiss the women from the chapel and not have us mingle too much after sacrament meeting. It just seemed odd because they've done this before and they just do it in the room where the elders quorum always meets. So there was a lot of setup. And they were just like, they kept telling the sisters, get out, get out, get out. And we're like, hey.
Whoa, ease.
So let's move along.
Okay.
If you have one last brief comment, I don't want to bore.
No, all we talked about though was the combatingpornography.org site.
Yeah.
And I just kept thinking, if you people would just listen to the show, we could save ourselves this entire 1.5 hour meeting.
Possibly should have stood up and mention to everyone that you have a podcast that is very informative.
Do that from the back. Excuse me.
Excuse me, but have you heard of This Week in Mormons? They've been dealing with this forever.
Be like, yo, I'm going to let you get back to your thing in just a minute. I just got to say, This Week in Mormons is the best podcast for Mormons, period. Period.
Yes, and they will stare at you, but either way, someone's going to check it out. So in the end, our goals will be met, I suppose. So today we have exciting things. A lot of, I guess we have a lot of gay rights stuff going on today, don't we?
Yeah, we noticed, we're divvying it up. And it's all gay rights. And
let me walk the listener through how we, at least some of the magic behind the scenes of TWIM. Because it's wild stuff, let me tell you. It's like a David Copperfield special.
Jeff, you mustn't.
It's very simple. As you might expect, Al and I, being co-hosts, co-producers, co-creators, co-everything, basically, we're
like a married podcast couple.
Yeah, but anyways, in our own time.
Speaking of gay marriage.
Yes, thank you. What have you? We just keep an eye out through our many sources, looking for stories and things that are going on and ideas for the show. We keep them, you know, we keep each other up on these various things, and then we talk about what we want to discuss. Before it's time to do the show, we figure out what we want to do. So it is interesting happenstance that is, as the two of us post and find different articles, that yes, things have funneled down today to a lot of interesting topics about things of that nature. So go figure. Every week the stars don't align. You might remember last week we talked about ice cream and how there should not be church schools. By the way, Al, I like how you... I think actually I got ripped one by somebody on the website for that, right?
For which one?
Well, remember your rants, you know, from the segment entitled Rants, which is ironic because we kind of rant a lot anyway. You know, I mentioned something about globalization. People were like, this isn't globalization. People on the website just laid into me. Into both of us, actually.
No, we had... I'd like to read Sam's comment, if I could.
Please do. I imagine this is the same... I believe it's the Sam we assume which Sam that is.
Yeah, we have a mutual friend, Sam, who listens. I thought he had a very good... He had a very good
The Sam
point.
Whose wife is named after a car.
Right.
Got it.
So he says, Jeff called Al anti-globalization, but isn't it really anti-localization? Globalization conjures up in my mind the idea of people going all over the world, exchanging culture and value. BYU programs encourage the trend of funneling more members to the U.S., and more specifically, the Mountain West. The thing that I like that he pointed out down here was kind of a case for the Mormon schools was essentially that it's like the best face that you could possibly conjure up to put out to the world.
That's very true, and that is something that you overlooked in your one-sided, narrow-viewed argument.
I still think I've got a strong enough case that I can really push this through to Tommy Boy, but. But I thought it made me think a little bit. I've had to rework my argument a little bit, and so I've got the post written as I'm refining it, and then I'll put it up and let everybody pick it apart.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And as I read that, I thought, like, why does Sam have to be smart? I felt like, you know, I got blown out of the water. It was terrible.
But you and I have smart friends, it seems like.
Notice no one disagreed with my criticisms of the Mormon Times. Therefore, in the battle of rants, I fear I am winning.
The ice cream.
For
takeover.
My rant goes undisputed. Yes.
Well done. Well done,
Thank
Jeff.
Thank you. Anyway, so let's move
on. I call on our listeners to battle Jeff. For his much more battle-esque prone.
All right.
He will stalk you in the comments and make you pay.
Not really. You know what's the funny thing is, for as much as I love to get into it on this and that, on the comments I pretty much chill on the webpage. As compared to Facebook, when people say dumb things and I'm like, oh, goody, goody, goody. So anyway, let's move along so we don't have another 55-minute show today.
Gotcha.
What do you say?
Yeah.
So take us there, Skitch.
All right. Thanks. That was a little throwback to... That thing you do, yes. All right. So first off, right out the gates, the Wall Street Journal did a kind of a review or a critique of the Proposition 8 film, which really stood out to me because there was a bunch of that stuff coming out over the last couple of weeks, primarily around Proposition 8, the film, and most of it supporting it for opening America's eyes to the evil that is democracy and Mormonism and all that stuff mixing together in one tragic mix. But it's an interesting read. It's worthwhile, to be sure, because they kind of go through it step by step as they see it and critique it, like I said. The couple of things that I thought were poignant, worth mentioning, they had a couple of quotes here in the article that I wanted to throw out to everyone and let them kind of mull over it. So they said the film, as they were kind of going through some of the things that they found wrong with the film, they said the film also asserts that the church should lose its tax-exempt status because of its support of Proposition 8. The church recently paid a small fine for failing to report all of its non-monetary contributions in a timely manner. But there's no evidence that the church violated any other laws. For better or worse, current jurisprudence allows tax-exempt religious organizations to engage in this sort of political activism. Thank you, Wall Street Journal, for a breath of, like, just coherency in that argument. Also, it says, ultimately, where the film really misses the mark in its portrayal of Mormons, less than 2% of Americans belong to the church. As a threat, so its portrayal of Mormons as a threat to fundamental American political values. At various points in U.S. history, Protestant Christian majorities persecuted Quakers, Mormons, Catholics, Jews. Until recent decades, racial majorities deprived African Americans, Chinese Americans, and other groups of basic citizenship rights. As a small, nonviolent majority, the Mormons pose no such threat. The specter of Mormon money raised in the film seems like the Latter-day Saint version of older fears about Jewish financiers controlling the American economy and government. The Mormon effort made a difference only because Californians are roughly evenly divided on the issues of same-sex marriage And then my favorite little paragraph comes right at the end. If you want to go and check it out. Indeed, the fact that small minorities, gay and Mormon, can influence public policy through their activism reflects the basic health of our democracy. Thousands of people, many of whom had not previously been politically active, wrote checks, called neighbors, and protested at rallies. While such observations are no consolation to California gay couples aspiring to legally marry, Proposition 8 did much to further the most vital political value of all, civil engagement. While I may disagree on that being the most vital of all political values, as previous papers in my political science career have attested, I do agree with that statement. Through actually doing something, actually going out and participating in the democratic process, how is that a bad thing? I submit that it is not. And yeah, I mean, really, it's when given the option to go out and vote on it, we voted one way. We didn't, you know, we encouraged everyone to kind of see our point of view, but reserved the right for everyone else to go and vote their way as well and let the pieces land where they may. So thank you, Wall Street Journal, for a very, fair piece, I think, written on that Proposition 8 bit so far as a review of it. Still, I haven't seen the film. I've been meaning to. But I'll let the Wall Street Journal report on it for now. So, I don't know. Would you?
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to read over that article, Jeff?
Some glancing, yes. But you summed it up very well. And I think it's a decent article. It does. There's some interesting points that I think of when I listen to you analyze it, summarize it. For one, it does talk about how something as ostensibly small as the church, you know, 2% of the American population, does not pose a threat. But we have to bear in mind, we are a very potent minority. The truth is the church did basically carry Prop 8, you know, by and large. I mean, it might have been one of many players, but we have such a knack in the LDS community for mobilizing and for organizing and for getting stuff done, that it does make us, by no means do I say a threat, but the fact is that we are able to politically organize stuff much better than other groups can. And I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily, but I also think that trying to diminish it by saying we're just 2% overlooks the fact that that little 2% is able to spearhead an entire movement and make sure and see it through to completion, which is, you know, a sizable undertaking. So, there is that. Now, at the same time, we mentioned that this is a minority, and that's something I love about this, that there are many, you know, I am not someone who stands in opposition to a lot of civil rights for homosexual couples. I'm just not, I never have been. And it's funny because they represent a minority of the overall U.S. population that is trying to push through, wants legislation to protect them. And I think it's funny that those who are against what the church has done totally overlook that members of the church are also a minority that have every right to protest and organize and act in whatever way they see fit. And it's almost, and they're almost equal on the minority thing. I don't remember what the exact demographics are, the numbers as far as percentage of the U.S. population that is homosexual, arguably big, more than 2%, I would assume. But either way, these are both small minorities. I think those are just, it's funny how things get lost in all the arguments and in all the, you know, all the finger pointing and all that stuff. You know what I mean?
Right. I really, you know, I tend to agree. For the most part, I think that, you know, in large part, the fact that we are able to mobilize and make things happen is just inherent to kind of the character of people that we often find. Well, and kind of the organization of the church more than anything. But still to that point, like, yeah, I don't know. I really see it as such a small, like, why single us out? I mean, it's really a scapegoat is needed for them to be angry at, right?
And that's true. And I get it that everyone's seeking equal protection under the law, and I understand that. And in the same sense, you know, there are some who argue that if gay marriage were to be legal, it could affect the church's stance or this or that. But a lot of that is not as founded as we might be led to believe as far as how it would affect the day-to-day operations of the church. But so I get that. You know, I get that these are people that feel like they are deprived of basic civil liberties. And they should be granted that. Civil liberties are fine, but civil liberties are not necessarily the same thing as a religious sacrament, I guess, is
right.
What a lot of people...
Right.
Tis true. And because that's fine, because we need to protect people. Because, you know, we are the same church where we spent, years under oppression by the U.S. government. So I can understand those who wonder why we don't have more empathy for this plight when we had peculiar beliefs, especially in the polygamy days, and we felt like the government was out to get us all the time and would not support what we felt should have been our freedoms to worship and do as we please.
Uh-huh.
So when you think about it, you know, how is the table turned then that, you know, now we, you know, there's so many different arguments that go along for every way of this. I do appreciate that the Wall Street Journal attempted to have a somewhat even-handed review of the movie, and I haven't seen it yet either, and I need to.
Would you call it fair and unbalanced?
Or well, fair and unbalanced. I would call everything on Fox News fair and unbalanced. and thankfully, the Wall Street Journal hasn't been too tainted ever since Rupert Murdoch, who, of course, owns Fox News and gives Glenn Beck money, for example. The Wall Street Journal hasn't been too affected since his acquisition of it. When was that? I don't know, 2 years ago? Maybe a little bit more? I'm not sure.
Yeah, everybody's pretty afraid of that. But
anyway, so that's keeping, unless you have anything else to say on the matter?
Not really, no.
Well, keeping this in mind then, moving on. Now, while I was up in Utah, I zigzagged up all around Wasatchia, as I like to call it, here and there. And a side note, I've always thought it's funny that whenever I'm in Utah, I don't think of it being a big deal to like zigzag up and down between Provo and Salt Lake or whatever, when that is like 45 miles. And I don't usually think much about it. Sure, I'll come down there just to hang out. What do I care? Whereas in California, if you're more than 20 miles out of my radius, there better be a dang good reason why I'm going out there. But anyway, side note.
Sure.
It always strikes me as funny whenever I'm in Utah, I don't think twice about, yeah, I'll drive down to Springville and then I'll just drive back to Farmington right afterwards. Who cares? But so I was, though, staying in Salt Lake proper, right in downtown, and I ran across, you know, those little free newsstands of all kinds of stuff. And, of course, City Weekly. Many cities have their little blank weekly whatever, you know, these free publications that are 85% ads and then a couple of articles.
Right.
So they had City Weekly. It caught my attention, though, because the lead line, the cover story, was about, they called it the Dishonor Code, and it was about gay students versus BYU's honor code, basically. So it caught my eye. I grabbed it, assuming I would get a chance to take a look at it and read it and see if it was worthy of the show or not. And it was pretty interesting. It's a lot of it was unsurprising because publications like Salt Lake City Weekly are very much leaning to the left and things of that nature, you know, and they support gay rights openly, and that's fine. But it was an interesting article because it raised some good points. It mostly talked about the stories of a number of individuals who went to BYU and saw their honor code status. They were in trouble with the honor code. They saw their status, their ability to go to the school, deteriorate or put into question because of the homosexual debate at BYU. Okay? You with me so far?
I follow you.
Anyway, so this one thing I was unaware of. In 2007, BYU did update the honor code to say that you can actually be openly gay. You still can't be, you know, in an intimate relationship with someone or practicing or doing something that would be another violation of the honor code. But you can openly say, no, I am a homosexual. I know that's a fine line. So this tells the story of a number of people, mostly three different people who had issues with BYU because of their sexual orientation. And I won't go into all the details of this because in many cases this was something where it's like basically you can be gay, but you can't have a boyfriend if you're a guy, or, you know, vice versa for women. Now, there was one guy, though.
Vice versa, does that indicate women?
I mean,
men?
Women on women. Men on men.
But men on men or vice versa, of course, meaning women on women.
Hey, I get what you mean, because men on men or vice versa means men on men. See what you did there. And that is part of my genius. See what happened right there. So anyway, just get to the point. There was one guy who told an interesting story that he talked about how he had entered into an honor code violating relationship with someone. And this does one thing is the honor code found out about it. The honor code, the weird thing about it, this is a side note, but this is part of it, that it's all like tattletaling, basically.
Right, it's
you get brought in there because someone squeals on you for something they think is wrong, which is weird to me because I would
as
never go to...
As per the case with... That's any college honor code.
Yeah, yeah. You. But, you know, generally speaking, unless it's egregious of some nature, I don't go to my bishop and say, hey, so-and-so is doing blah, 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 blah. That's not my job and that's not my place. So what is funny is, as some of these little anecdotes go on, that it seems like the honor code trumps actual church doctrine and bishop's authority, which I think is weird when you get down to it. Because and
how do you mean? How do you mean?
Regardless of any criticisms, of course, BYU is a private institution and can do whatever the heck it wants, and its attendees should be completely aware of that. And if they don't want to be a part of that, they can go to a different school, right? Totally fair.
Yeah.
Okay. How do I mean? I mean, for example, this guy who had inappropriate relationship with another man. Honor Code found out about it, and they wanted to discipline him. He had, however, spoken before about it with his bishop. He was a gay student, but he was trying to abide by the Honor Code precepts and not actually be dating or involved with anyone.
Sure.
As was expected of him. And he realized he messed up with this, and he was trying to be forthright about it. And he talked to his bishop, and his bishop even recommended, because you have to have your ecclesiastical endorsement to continue at BYU. Every year, you know, you get your ecclesiastical endorsement. He was open about it with his bishop, and the bishop was aware of the situation, counseling him with it, and the bishop gave him his recommendation and recommended that he, you know, continue through despite these issues, finish at BYU, you know, still have a good relationship with the church as he sorted things out, as he tried to come to grips with all of this, okay? Which I think, I wasn't there in the situation, but I think pragmatism is generally desired in difficult situations like that. Because what's it going to do if a bishop says, no, you sinned, you're done, no ecclesiastical endorsement, I'm done. However, so
right.
despite the bishop's recommendation that he be fine, that he that gives him an ecclesiastical endorsement that says you are okay to go to BYU, which this bishop did as a judge in Israel, okay, the honor code office disagreed and suspended him from studies. And he had spent like a year trying to get back into school after having to write, I think, papers every other week talking about morality and the role of family and things like this. So I think it's really weird that how can the honor code trump a bishop when being able to go to BYU is directly related to whether or not you have an ecclesiastical endorsement and whether your bishop says it is okay for you to go there.
That's exactly like you said, though. It's a private institution. Does what
it
wants.
It is, and they can do what they want. But I am saying that I don't think that's right. They can do what they want. I'm never going to question the legal nature of what they're
sure.
doing. But when you think about it from that point of view, I get that people might break it in this sense, as far as homosexuality or what have you. But nevertheless, if a bishop is recommending that things be okay, is he not the higher judge here? Who is some arbitrary panel that at BYU is generally one individual? This is not some sort of jury of your peers or anything like that with the honor code. It never has been. It is just some guy who works for the dean of students,
right.
who is an employee, who is not ordained or set apart to make any sort of judgments through revelation or anything of that nature, who is to come and tell you what you can or cannot do. And I don't agree with everything they're doing, and I agree that we need to, you know, if you agree to go to BYU, abide by the honor code. But this article called into question a lot of things, and of course I appreciate that it did highlight the very real existence of the gay community at BYU, because so many people, and I even saw this somewhat when I was doing the interviews on the street, I asked many people what they thought was one of the bigger issues facing the church. And no one said that, I don't think anybody actually said the nature of the family was the biggest issue, but I noticed that, especially when I was specifically on BYU students who seemed like, for lack of a better term, very ho-hum, just happy-go-lucky BYU students. Most of them said, no, there are no problems. It's good. It's good. Everything's fine. Everything's wonderful. And I envy those who have, you know, that outlook and think everything's hunky-dory, but I appreciate the chance to be more aware of that there are real issues and real people, even at BYU. And that's a hard thing to come to grips with because, you know, what are we supposed to do? This is still the Lord's University, and there is a certain standard. And I believe in that. But interesting article from City Weekly, and I certainly hope other people get a chance to read it and check it out. I don't, please, by no means expect it to be some sort of even-handed look at the thing. It has an agenda. But even when you take that out of the equation, there is some interesting stuff to take away from it.
Boy, that was an in-depth approach to that. I was expecting much less from City Weekly.
It might have been too in-depth, actually, and for that I apologize.
No, that was all right. Yeah, I don't know. So in summary, would you say, if you just had to answer in maybe a couple of sentences, like one or two sentences, do you feel like the honor code unjustly, or I guess unjustifiably even, treats homosexual students?
Well, it all depends. I think obviously that's part of the honor code. And if you break the honor code in any way, you know, if you have someone of the opposite sex in your bedroom, the horror. But if you do that, you can get in trouble for it. But I do think that because of the, I don't want to say stigma, but because of how much of a hot issue homosexual stuff is, it's far more likely to be driven to the forefront than, you know, than even basic immorality between heterosexual consenting adults. Okay. Which is also wrong. But I think far more often that is going to be worked out with a bishop, but something like homosexuality, because the honor code, I feel like the honor code exists more than anything to properly groom the school for the appearance of the school and to train the next generations of leaders of the church. That's a big part of it. But a lot of that, I think, is to filter through and keep BYU's image what it needs to be. And I have a lot of other thoughts about the honor code.
Now, often the rebuttal to this is you know, I knew what I was signing up for when I decided to go to school at BYU, so it should be, no, you know, like, I understood that it wasn't allowed, blah, blah, blah. And so now all of a sudden to get in there and then start complaining about it seems a little bit silly for people to just go in there and say, well, you know, look, you're so discriminatory against me because here I am in this school and now you're doing this. When really, that was part of it, you know, that's part of the deal from the get-go, right? The so far as your argument goes, though, I mean, I think that's kind of an interesting take on it, because really it's a much more, kind of even-handed look than what I'm used to hearing on the issue so far as BYU, you know, as so far as homosexuals in conjunction with BYU goes. I still don't know. Like, I'm still not 100% sold on the, on the argument from the homosexual's point of view. I can't quite see what it is they argue, because I've read hundreds of articles, kind of around this topic, and I didn't quite get the same thing out of the City Weekly article even as it seems like you did either. So. Interesting. Yeah,
it raises a lot of stuff, but the honor code itself is a whole other debate.
Because I didn't mind the honor code that much.
Yeah, but like, you went to BYU Hawaii, where nobody cares about the honor code.
Yeah, technically that's also true. That is also true.
I mean, come on.
I had a great experience where I took a girl out on a date in Provo when I was up there visiting some friends one time. She and like the movie was getting pretty close to midnight, like it was going to finish up at about 12:30. And she's like, "Oh, you need to take me home." And I was like, "Well, the movie's over in like 30 minutes." She was like, "Yeah, but it's almost 12. I was like, well, what happens at 12? She's like, curfew? I was like, you have a curfew?
But you were at the movies?
No, we were at home watching
Sorry.
It.
Sorry. Oh, yeah. You can't.
And I was like, curfew? She's like, yeah, you have one too. It's part of the honor code. And I was like, did not know that. Did not know that.
Like this sums up for me. This is why I think it's a problem that this one guy, Brian Clement, and I don't agree with everything he says, but he does say that when he talked to his bishop, says, they didn't pull my endorsement, so according to the church, I was worthy enough to stay at BYU. But then, so he says it's odd that I didn't get kicked out through the church, because that's technically supposed to be the higher authority, which it is.
Well, do you really think so, though? Like,
I'm
like
sure
so far,
there are.
So, well, because so far as the school goes, right, like you said, the school's job is to kind of protect the school and present that same face. So far as the church goes, I mean, a bishop is going to interview him, and if he finds him worthy, you know, if he's not in a homosexual relationship or not, well, or any sexual relationship for that matter, and he can find him worthy, then he's going to say, yeah, you know, go for it. And it's up to the school whether or not they want to, you know, they want to deal with you differently than I did, because he's coming from a strictly religious standpoint, right? The honor code has to deal with the religious portion of it, as well as the academic, as well as the, you know, interaction, like student social aspect of it, as well as,
well,
yada,
it does
yada.
It does, but think about this. It's like, was he walking, or was someone walking around BYU campus with their boyfriend holding hands? I mean, that I would get, because the honor code is to properly groom the school and discipline its students so that it all goes along with the way the school is. But at the same time, if it's something that really involves a sin or transgression that should be dealt with by an ecclesiastical authority, I feel like that's the arena in which that belongs. You know, I mean,
the honor code is not set apart as a judge
of people to say
whether
they are
totally
or not.
A judge.
No, but that's what I mean. It is a judge, but it's not. There is no sort of doctrinal basis by which the honor code can basically deem someone worthy or not.
No, it's much like the Apple app process, where it's just a black box, right? You have no idea really what's going to set it off and what's going to make it angry at you and what's going to make it fine.
Yeah.
But I kind of tend to stand behind kind of the honor code side of it a little bit, just because it's not, the honor code doesn't act as a religious judge at all, right? So if your religious judge says fine, because not just Mormons can go, right? If you're Catholic, you've still got to go and get an interview from a Catholic.
And you've got to live by the honor code. Yeah.
But if the Catholic said that this guy's worthy to go, I mean, that's no higher authority than a Mormon bishop.
Well, normally that might be true, but that's not. But in the case of a university that is owned and paid for by the church, I think if you are a member of that same church...
Look at the principle, though. The principle
that espouses
the principle is that the, you know, the religious authority, his job is to say whether or not you are worthy, as he deems, to go to the school, and then the school takes that in consideration with a vast, you know, other number of criteria to make the decision of whether or not they deem you as worthy to go to the school, so to speak.
Yeah, but even so, it's like the honor code's all based on tattling, and it's just weird.
That part I do hate, and I know many people who have been...
I know many people who have been harangued by them, basically.
Or like you sunbathe in a bikini in your backyard, and somebody peeks over the fence and sees you and reports you, and it's like, seriously, people?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's the one funny thing I got from so many people when I did the street interviews was... And this was especially from disaffected people who are now less active in the church. And, you know, there are plenty of things I don't know about their story, and I get that. But almost every single one of them mentioned that they thought people around there in that mentality were very judgmental. They felt like it was an extremely judgmental society. And if I can pat myself on the back, they said, Utah Mormons aren't like California Mormons. They're very judgmental. And I said, thank you. Thank you very much. But anyways, it's interesting. We've been on this one for a while. But I think there's the issue of the gay thing and there's the honor code issue, which is a whole other thing. Because, yeah, I feel like I've known people that have been called in basically trying to get them to squeal on somebody else because of things they've heard. Because they know you're friends with somebody.
Right.
And they want you to come in there and squeal on them. And they're like, what does this have to do with anything? I'm not squealing on them. I don't know. Anyway, let's move right along to a far more uplifting topic, Al. Please,
this
go,
been,
go.
This has been kind of a downer of an episode, man.
That's why we need to pop it. Don't worry. Remember, we have a whiz-bang finale.
Oh, it's true. It's true. Okay, so we wanted to do a quick roundup, just remind everyone that there are pageants going on, both the Nauvoo and the Palmyra Hilcomora pageant, both of which are fantastic. I see both of them regularly. And saw the Hilcomora pageant for the first time last year. So when I say regularly, I mean the Nauvoo pageant, which I haven't seen in 3 years. So disregard that that entire statement. But both are very good things. So if you have any plans of being in the New York or Illinois areas in the next week, I highly suggest you check them out. The Hilcomora pageant was interesting to me because it's entirely around kind of Christ coming to the Nephites, right? And they do a really good job special effects wise of pulling that off. Like it was really interesting to have that visualization to toss in there with it. And the protesters up by Palmyra, New York, tremendous people. They had bullhorns. They were like having a party on the road, screaming at us as we're walking in. And the church, I love how they do this, but they just put these loudspeakers on huge antennas all through the parking lot wherever anybody might be, and like right next to these protesters, and just blast hymns, like blast them. So it's like the Spirit of God is just cranking over the tones of these people screaming at us for walking to a death trap of evil and illegitimacy.
We blare music and then we wonder why they tried to run us out of town 150 years ago.
Hey, every teenager knows where I'm coming from on this. We just wanted to be appreciated. But anyway, Hilcomora, Nauvoo, if you guys are thinking about it, this is just by way of helpful reminder.
Yeah.
We love you.
The whistles go woo-woo. Have you seen that?
Of course I've seen that.
The whistle goes woo-woo. Yeah. All right. That's a wonderful story, Al. So everyone,
now back to you, Jeff. Why don't you take us through another
gay
round?
Gay marriage in Argentina.
Let's make this one happier. We're talking about gays.
Well, gays. It's gay. It's happy. Hello.
I know.
This is a thing from the Salt Lake Tribune. Just a quick little story. It's interesting. I believe the Argentinian government is toying with legalizing same-sex marriage, and as a precursor, the church has done similar to what they did right before Prop 8, not organizing anything like crazy, but just sending out a statement to be read to remind members that marriage is ordained of God, sacred between a man and a woman, and a lot of other stuff that comes from the Proclamation on the Family, basically.
Now, have you noticed, it seems like the church is just kind of hit and miss on what they choose to protest or really throw emphasis behind. Do you have any insight into what that algorithm is for what they do with which gay marriage situation?
Well, I think it's the numbers game. It's straight up what it is. A lot of European countries have, Spain legalized same-sex marriage 4 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, and you didn't see anything happen from the church because the church doesn't have realistically. They're not going to take on Catholic Spain, where they don't have the members. And the same thing in Argentina. I mean, the church does not have nearly as many members as, say, it does in California, where the members can be a serious presence, obviously. I mean, Argentina's got, 40-plus million people, right? And I imagine the membership is maybe in the hundreds of thousands, if we're lucky, if that.
Right.
I think it actually had the numbers somewhere in here, but I don't remember where it was. Well, here it is right here, yes. There are 41 million people in Argentina and 371,000 members of the church in Argentina. So it's a much smaller minority compared to what you get elsewhere. Also, I think just culturally, these are Catholic countries. It's just a different ballgame. So oftentimes the church has to choose its battles, I believe. It tries to remind the membership of what is, but at the same time it realizes it's not in a position as far as political clout or anything of that nature to try to just jump into the mix and keep something from getting passed. Also, the other funny thing, though, is I think in a lot of these countries, gay marriage being legal does not affect the day-to-day routine of the membership as much as it would elsewhere. Because, say there's some things, for example, like getting married in the temple. Here in the States, when you get married in the temple, that is also your civil wedding that is recognized by the state, correct?
Right.
Most other countries, pretty much the rest of the world, I don't know how Canada fares, but as far as I know, basically everywhere else I've ever heard of, the countries don't care about what you do in the temple. They care about you being, it's either by, well, like in Spain, for example, a Catholic priest was good enough, of course, and then most members of the church just went to the courthouse or city hall and got married.
Right.
And then you have the window to get sealed. I think in a lot of these countries it already is that way, so something like legalizing gay marriage is not going to affect the administration of the church that much, really, if at all. So it's just not worth the bottom line is, while it's an important issue, it's just not worth the opportunity cost is too high, is what I'd say.
Huh. Makes sense.
Does it?
Well, I was just kind of wondering about it because it seemed like I couldn't quite put a finger on it. I remember there was right after California, Illinois, or Iowa brought the same-sex marriage thing to the table, and the church was like, yeah, whatever.
And they don't do it. And I think also part of this, California is an interesting example. The population sort of, they've voted in favor of it, obviously, because California is actually a largely religious state, despite being a more democratic state. It is not more democratic in the sense that its people are more secular. It is a very religious state. And as such, Prop 8 especially passed because of the black community and the Hispanic community, which while the Hispanic community typically votes Democrat, they are also diehard Catholics.
Just never can read them.
No, they're all over the place. they're not Cubans, those reliable Republicans that they are. Bless you, Cubans. So all these things come together. I'm sure, obviously, through prayer and revelation, they assess the situation and realize that this is a feasible situation where, through organization, something can actually be done. And it's been that way twice, with Prop, 22 and then Prop 8.
This last week, Massachusetts refuted the Defense of Marriage Act in their state, so kind of overwent the federal law to allow same-sex marriage, so like completely allow same-sex marriage in Massachusetts now, whereas before they just had state mandates, but now the Massachusetts Supreme Court, I believe. I may be wrong on that, but that's from what I understand. That's what happened. But it's like, again, I didn't see a huge church push on that. But
look
a letter
at this. Think about
Argentina.
Massachusetts and Iowa.
Mitt Romney, Mitt the Kid?
A lot of it depends on how religious or conservative or secular a place is. This article talks about the point that Argentina
So they only gamble when they think they can win? Is that any way to play poker?
I don't think it is, but I think it's, like we said, it's a... You know, you gotta assess your chances, really. The way you really play
poker,
the way you play poker is you know your odds. Yeah,
know,
it's true.
Know when to fold them.
It's true, and in California, there was a feasible chance of victory, whereas some other places, it's just, as sad as it is, I'm sure that President Monson and his counselors pray about this, and it's confirmed that this is not a place where fighting that battle through the political arena is going to produce any fruit in that sense.
Fair enough.
It's a sad reality, but it pretty much is a reality. And that's why I'm sure very little is going to be done in Argentina if this passes beyond reminding members of the nature of marriage, of what it really is. So that's what I think
Good.
Will happen. It all depends on the society in question, good sir. All depends on the society in question. All
right, well, we're running
We're running very,
very
long. I feel
like we should check in with our boy over at Zarahemla Times before we wrap it up, though.
I think it's about that time, isn't it?
Once a month, whether we need it or not, we always like to go to ZarahemlaTimes.com.
Who shall read it?
To visit Kevin Beckstrom.
Do you want
to
do it this
visionary?
Week or should
I? You read it so well.
Who gets
give
it? All
us,
right.
Give us today
this
or
week's,
this week's.
From Friday, July 9th, 2010, is entitled All Is Well. All Is Well. Now, it starts off with a picture
frame
of
one.
I like that he wastes two frames on basically the same picture. Okay. You have a picture of daughter, chick, whose name I always forget.
With the streaks in her hair.
With the streaks in her hair, much like Rogue from X-Men, something along those lines. And she looks very scared. And then in the next slot, the next frame, she still looks scared, but maybe a little less so, perhaps. Then she appears to be in deep thought, as she is clearly thinking of many Nephite girls singing. And they are singing the words to, I am a child of God. Etc. Et
and they get to with parents kind and dear.
And then the next frame, she is sleeping soundly in her pillow. So I don't know if the real question here is why was she awake? Was she afraid? What was she afraid of? That's what's unclear here. Was she afraid that her parents were not kind and dear?
I believe this is a commentary on society.
I mean, what is she worried about? She's just up at night. I don't know what to do. Who am I? Kevin Beckstrom, sir, you should have added thought bubbles because you wasted two panes just showing her freaked out. One pane of freak out would have been fine, and then a second pane of freak out with a thought bubble might have helped out a little bit more.
What is Naomi thinking? What is she thinking?
Ah, yes, Naomi's her name. No one knows what Naomi is
thinking. I had to look it up.
They're a lovely family. They really are. Hey, look, his followers are still at 14. Woo, huh. Beckstrom.
Poor guy.
I love him.
What were... And another gem I just found while we were like
one is never enough, is it?
They Might Be Elders, which is a Mormon comedy musical troupe.
Stop it.
That has redone a Blink 182 song, What's My Age Again?
Wait a minute, how'd you find this?
I'll send it to you.
Is it theymightbeelders.com? Oh, and they are signed by Hailstorm Entertainment, the same people who bring us those Mormon movies.
The brilliant, brilliant movies. Here's the YouTube link.
Oh boy, I'm looking at pictures and they already look like complete gomers.
I love this. What's the comedy troupe at BYU?
Which there's a couple of them, and I don't remember any of their names.
Divine Comedy.
Divine Comedy. Yeah, one of my friends actually did that. One of my friends I saw while I was up there.
Well, this troupe seems to be made up of large, overweight students, a majority of them female, bless their hearts, using Rock Band-esque instruments.
And how's that going? I feel like we need to play a sample of this now that you brought it up.
I think we should. I don't think anything but greatness will come from this.
So what I'm going to do then is we're going to end the show. And I will play this entire song as the outro music.
Good work.
If that seems fair to you.
It does.
And that is how we will do it. And that is how it'll be. And in that case, we will leave.
The show has left me so depressed.
Sometimes we have to have a serious discussion.
But it was all on gay rights and like homosexuals and Which isn't bad, but there's just a lot of stories in the news about it.
There are. Anyway, everybody, please visit us. ThisWeekInMormons.com.
We're now tweeting. If you'd like to tweet us your great tips in Mormon yada yada throughout the week.
And I believe that is twitter.com/TheRealTwim. That is TWIM and real as in actually REAL. So twitter.com/TheRealTwim. Yeah.
And that's it.
Cool. So, and we'll post that up there. And so remember, ThisWeekInMormons.com, Facebook.com/ThisWeekInMormons. And thanks, Al. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.
Thanks, everybody. And that's been another wonderful edition of This Week in Mormons. Peace out.
I sought them out. It was a Friday there. I said a prayer to get the spirit here. We started speaking out about this tape we had. So then I turned on the TV. And then we started doing genealogy, which was a major factor for her family. Doing lots of research on church catalogs. What the heck is pedigree? My friends say I should give up now. What's a year again? How old were they then? Then later on, with some names found, I called my mom from another town. I told her, hey, what's up? And that I found some names. She was as happy as could be. And then she started researching her history, which was a major factor for our family trees. Doing lots of research on some microfilm. Who the heck was 23? My friends say I should give up now. What's a year again? How old were they?